KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, it's been way too long since Patty Jenkins made a movie that played in theaters. I met her. This is how far back we go. I met her at the premiere party for Monster in New York, just barely in the 21st century. And here it is a scant 17 years later that we get to see her follow-up after flirting with a few other movies, Wonder Woman. First of all, it's so great to have you here.
Thank you, Elvis. It's so awesome to see you. So great.
Like I was saying before we got started, being blinded by the glare from your bullets for bracelets over there. But it's great to talk to you about this movie because I don't know if you know, I'm a big comics person. And let's start with that. Let's start with the idea that Wonder Woman is one of the few comics in its original incarnation that had the creator's name on it. Mm. And the creator's name was a pseudonym. But that also that there is an interesting kind of pop feel to it. But there was a density, I thought, to it. And what I was talking to you about before we got started is that you don't confuse darkness for density, and you wanted to give this movie density, didn't you?
I did, yeah. And I think that the greatest thing about comics and the reason that I love them too is that I feel that they have the potential to be the useful metaphor of our times that Greek mythological characters were, and so many famous characters that we have used to be the center of story. And why are we attracted to that kind of character? You know, Hercules, the strong guy, because we're both drawn to the fantastical visual of it, but yet now you can use that to tell a parable about life or turn the life stories. And so just something I believe in superhero stories. I think how incredible if you can both satisfy on the level of a superhero film, but the subtext beneath it be turning a universal issue of life. Like, wow. It's why I believe in the genre and why I believe, you know, it's so much more complicated than superhero movies are in or superhero movies are out. All of this is just story. Every movie that we make is story, and story goes on forever as long as you're using it to turn something universal to mankind, you know? So it's a great medium for it.
I guess people who wouldn't know this about you would say if you go from Monster to Wonder Woman, that seems to be a big shift for somebody like you. But if we look at this sort of in abstract terms, they're both movies about people on a mission.
Yep.
There's a kind of fanatical devotion to mission.
Yep.
People looking for like a kind of a mentor figure or somebody to love.
Yeah.
Really looking for somebody to love and looking for something bigger than them.
Yep. Thank you, Elvis. I appreciate that because to me, I actually felt oddly like I got to make as personal of a film in a certain way with Wonder Woman as I did with Monster. I worked with characters and a character arc very similarly. And so it's a different physical process and it's different goals in mind. But in both cases, I was only aiming for the best kind of genre for that specific movie. I don't only want to make movies like Monster or only want to make movies like Wonder Woman, but that was the best possible flourishing version of this character's story. And in both, I love nothing more than to put myself in the shoes of an extraordinary character until it becomes normal and then try to experience what that journey would be like from that point of view. That's a sport I love.
I was thinking even, you know, there's a dance in both that's kind of key to showing us who these women are, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's their romance and wants and relationship in the world in that way is absolutely important to both movies.
I was thinking about that because watching Monster before I just went to see Wonder Woman, which, by the way, I paid to go see. So,
I
bought those bracelets for you.
Thank you.
I was thinking about how important that dance is in both these movies. It's almost like the scene of seeing a little girl dance on her dad's shoes in some ways, mm-hmm. about somebody wanting to be led, somebody who's a more imposing person, in fact, wanting to be led in some way. And I want you to talk about that a little bit because I just think that's really interesting.
That's super interesting. I've never thought about it in that way. I think you're right. In both cases, here's something, for whatever reason, And I think it probably is because I'm a woman and I'm not seeing either character in this way. I don't see them as, it's a woman, let me prove they're strong. I have no problem in both scenarios realizing how incredibly strong these characters are, both Eileen Wuornos and Wonder Woman. So for me, a huge part of the journey was their strength and volatility and power was a given. How do I also show that any character, which I believe, every, you know, from the most highly convicted guy in prison that I've met to the most lauded person I've ever met, they're all the same. You know, you're all just a human being wanting something. And they all have the entire spectrum of personality. So taking something that the strength of which was a given to me and making sure that I saw the vulnerability and the wants and the need that's usually so informs that kind of power was an incredibly important part of this process with both characters to me. You would be shortchanging them as a universal character if they didn't have both ends of the spectrum.
This is a character that it's interesting. You're talking about this sort of invention of the comics. It's been reinvented in so many ways. I mean, go back to the TV show, which started in World War II, took it back to its roots, but then made it contemporary. But then there's a period in the 70s where Wonder Woman didn't have any powers, and she's sort of like Diana Rigg from the Avengers.
Yep.
You know, the new Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Which I'm sad to say I actually have issues of that.
Right.
But that Wonder Woman has been this, to go back to her origins, almost this kind of clay that people try to sort of imbue with certain things. And with the exception of that weird trio, that tripartite group that created her, and the early parts of the TV show, people not knowing what to do with Wonder Woman in a lot of ways.
So bizarre. I don't know why, but and it's fascinating if you look at all of the twists and turns, and I appreciate so many of them. I think, like, listen, any of these characters, everybody loves them, and everybody has their own versions of them they want to see, and I applaud that. I think that's kind of the cool thing about superheroes is, you know, somebody can take on Batman and what Batman means to them and take that in another direction, and good for them. But to me, what's interesting about Wonder Woman is from the start, I feel very in line with their original vision for Wonder Woman, which is she is a simple character who is very strong and believes in very clean, clear, powerful, universal things and has a moral objective with mankind. And that's what makes her very unique. She's not just here to stop crime. She's not here just to kill a villain. She's here because she actually believes in the betterment of mankind through love and truth and justice. And that is unbelievable. It's so cool. And also, it ties her more than most to the, you know, thousand-year-old tradition of storytelling of religious figures where you're looking for, okay, I am not like Moses, you know, but yet I hear that story over and over again, and then it helps me to understand something about myself and the life here on this earth. Like, she is that even a hair more than a lot of these other characters. So that's, I mean, to me, it's been interesting to watch even in this process what people will want to debate taking away from the cleanliness of that vision, you know, like, be it that she needs to be harder or less attractive or whatever it is. And to me, I felt my job and mission was to protect that nothing changed in that regard, that she stayed just as strong, but also just as loving and vulnerable and wonderful, you know, and accessible.
Okay, because I guess what I'm wondering too about this is before we got started, you were saying that kind of basically a touchstone for you was Superman 1, which really uses the comics as kind of a taking off point.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happens here too. I mean, you even make a change. I don't want to give too much away, but it takes place in the Great War, but not the war that Wonder Woman had her origins in.
Yeah.
And that's really makes it about innocence as much as anything else. You're not trying to use an archetypal figure to fight contemporary battles, but you also use that as a way to draw contemporary corollaries, don't you?
Yeah. I thought, I couldn't believe how interesting World War I, interesting that it's 100 years ago, interesting that we're seeing all of those, you know, anniversaries, but also, really, World War I was the birthplace of our modern world. like so many of the decisions that we were making.
Gender politics, so the chemical warfare, absolutely. That functions as a kind of terrorism, the fall of governments, basically the whole
international,
world being in flux.
The international world, the everybody crossing over into each other's borders, how many different countries were fighting in that
isolationism
war.
Isolationism versus being a part of the world.
Absolutely. And so what was super cool, the hardest thing about this whole movie was tone. And I was obsessed about like, guys, we've got a lot of great artists here. We have to make sure it doesn't accidentally look like the greatest BBC production of a miniseries. Like, and then it's ridiculous. The superhero walks in. So the thing that I kept stressing was we have to pretend that this is the 50s that we all know in Superman 1. So you make a joke out of the, we have to make 20% pop out of the things that are a given of the period, even if it's a period you don't know. So get to know the period so well that it's as if you've known it your whole life, and now make a 20% caricature of that period so that you have, so that we Popeyes it a tiniest bit, like all the men talking in the room and all the mess in the streets. And, you know, that was very cool because we actually did it in our own minds. I got so used to 1917 that it started to feel extremely modern to me, where I was like, ooh, how avant-garde. Look at these women's clothing. This is incredible. They're going to dress like that? That's crazy. You know, that was super cool about it. And a great way to talk about, like, send this superhero who's totally unfamiliar with our world in and both comment on the absurdity of those times we can laugh at because they're absurd. But she's talking about right now. She's saying right now, so you guys bomb people from afar and you can't see who you're killing? Where's the honor in that, you know? These are real questions. And I love that they start out naive and then they slowly, you start to realize that actually that's does not make any sense at all, what she's pointing out. And so that was it was a wonderful thing to get to know, thing to become, in, you know, so familiar with and then use in that way.
It's a treat. We're talking to our old friend Patty Jenkins, the director of the film. What's it called again? Oh, Wonder Woman is what it's called. What's so fascinating to me is that after that first third or so, which is set in bright, I hate to say paradisical sunlight,
yeah.
But it is, and then it becomes physically and literally like a dark movie. But again, that's because the world has become so much more concentrated and dense rather than just using dark as the way it's used so often in certain kinds of adventure movies as a way just to convey attitude rather than try to tell an emotional story.
Mm. Yeah, I loved that. I think that's one of something I aspired to do with this movie was to be tonally incredibly broad and classic, not broad comedy, but have the whole world in it and make it a grand movie. So it's got humor, it's got love, it's got excitement, it's got all of those things. And I wanted it to have each of those things because life has each of those things. So I, even when I made Monster and it was very dark, Charlize and I laughed all the time about the funny jokes we were trying to instill into moments because everybody laughs. You know, like everybody in the world laughs. And so that was something I loved. And then I loved seeing that point of view shift from this beautiful, magical paradise island to, you know, 1917 England and the density and chaos, but also humor of that time, and then to war. Yeah, what was interesting too, and it's interesting because I haven't talked about color in this exact way, even though I thought a lot about color because I'm a little bit obsessed with color. In the opening, it's all color, right? It's every color. And that is life. And that is beauty. And if we were living a balanced life, and that was always what I loved about the Mascara, I always thought to myself, if we were to look at the civilization, they would have figured out, ideally, for them to live up to what the comic books wanted them to be, they would have figured out very, very organized and peaceful ways of surviving, which could go on forever. And so I loved that about that world. And then what was interesting is when we got into Man's world, I didn't want there to be an overwhelming array of color. And that's actually true to the period because paints are limited and pigments are going to be limited back then. And so we really struggled with what is the language of that world versus the Mascara, which is like this incredible, you know, idyllic island light world. And we ended up landing on John Singer Sargent, who's one of my favorite painters. But John Singer Sargent is very modern in a way. He's very pop in a way because he would make these incredibly bold choices where all the shadows go to black and then only this red stands out and only this white. And that really informed everything is like it is Man's world is much more limited, controlled, it's within a smaller pocket. So there's actually a lot of color, but the color is only blue, gray, not green. You know, it's like blues, grays, red, and white. And so it was kind of cool to get to dig into suddenly a very controlled palette of life as we know it in man's world.
That's a great place to take a break. We will. I'm talking to Patty Jenkins, the director of the film Wonder Woman. When we come back, it's the treatment part. We'll ask why she's not called Wonder Woman in the movie, but more questions to be answered. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's the treatment. Patty Jenkins, director of Wonder Woman. Why is she not called Wonder Woman? She's a wonder, isn't she?
She is. We actually did have a moment where we thought I had this riff that I wanted in the movie so badly, and the moment just never came. So I'll tell you now because I just think it's so funny. I wanted this scene where Wonder Woman is talking, where Diana is talking to Steve, and Steve is trying to describe to her, wow, what you did was really, it was like, it was like magic, like, wonderful, like it's a wondrous. It was like you're like a wondrous, magical woman, and you found like mankind trying to find the words to put to it that you know is going to turn into Wonder Woman. I thought it would have been so funny, but it was this like the moment never came because the only place it would have made sense is in the only chance for a really romantic moment between them, which couldn't just go on and on. So we didn't end up having it, but yeah, I think. What I love about it is that she's just Diana. The world will end up naming her Wonder Woman. You know, mankind will name her Wonder Woman.
There's so many questions that come to mind. But the one thing I want to ask you since we sat down, actually, and this is something that's also key in Monster as well. For your protagonist, there's this constant forward movement and the almost heedless of what's ahead of them. They're constantly moving forward. Talk about that. Need to just constantly push and to go ahead and to create the sense of momentum that exists, for your protagonists.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that that's probably stemming from some deep, it's coincidental that those are the two characters, but my attraction to those characters could be personal, and that might be my, you know, experience in the world. I feel like there are two different kinds of – there are many different kinds of stories, but two different kinds of stories for characters in this kind of story. They can either be the normal man called upon by the hero's call or some inciting event that causes a series of events that they're reacting to. Or they can be someone filled with want that we relate with. I think I've most identified with the journey of wants because then I understand what I'm seeing, a story of we all want. And I myself even want a lot of understanding about what we're doing here, you know, what we're doing here in this world, what is it all about, what is love, what is bravery, what is heroics. Like, I'm deeply interested in that. And so I do relate with the story of someone trying to figure out how to balance that in one's life.
It's the treatment. We're talking to the director of the film Wonder Woman. We now know why we'll see that name later in the film series, Patty Jenkins. The other thing, too, I want to get to you is that the way you cast for faces, I mean, if we look at what Paradise Island is like and all those beautiful faces versus faces that are a lot more, I'm trying to think, faces with a lot of character in it. I mean, mm-hmm. You want every face, once we get to London, to be a really memorable face. I mean, even the faces in that alleyway fight, the faces that stick with you.
Good.
And I wanted you to talk a little bit about the kind of visual types that you were casting because they're all incredibly memorable faces, but of very different types.
Yeah, that actually harkens back to exactly what we were talking about Pop. These are very strong visual storytelling is wonderful in a comic book themed movie because, you know, nobody's drawing in a beautiful panel of a great graphic novel or comic book. Nobody's drawing a anonymous person. That's not what it is. You're talking in like, oh, the bad guy and the hat's down and he's got the pipe or whatever it is. It's like you're talking in strong symbols of who characters are and memorable characters. I love that anyway. I just love, I think that that background and background actors and details of things are incredibly influential to the quality of a movie, you know? And so I think I'm already attracted to, like, really putting a mandate for extreme attention to that kind of detail. But in this case, I think it also really helped it to speak in, you're speaking in very short snips of, like, oh, it's the bad guy. That's the bad guy. You know, it's, you're not being vague about it or generic about it.
But I also wanted to talk, too, about the when she and Steve sort of bring his intrepid band along with them. And they're the kinds of figures who predated comic book heroes, but were heroes nonetheless, the kind of figures who could have stepped out of Sherlock Holmes or Doc Savage or those kinds of figures.
Yeah, what I loved about those guys and that whole journey was the idea of them colliding into a world that was so complicated in that war, like so many, all of those different nations colliding. And genuinely, in the trenches in Belgium, any one of those people could have been there. Random huge numbers of Native Americans came over and fought because it was better than staying at home. I mean, that fascinates me, is like they were so caged up and held that they actually preferred to be in war in a trench because at least they were alive and they were free. I mean, that's amazing. So those guys were showing up and walking through, and the Moroccans were sending, huge groups that Samir would have come from. And so, and Charlie's a Scottish guy who actually, his backstory we didn't get super into. He's been dismissed from the military and he keeps trying to go back in because he can't shoot anymore, you know? And so what I loved was she's coming into a complicated world where she doesn't know better. Of course, that makes perfect sense to her that there would be these odd, varied people, but they all also seem like they're not great version of mankind because of what they've had to resort to survive from Steve on, all of them. Why would you lie and why would you do any of these things? And through them, I love the fact that A, they need a team because to go through war, you would need some sort of fortification. But B, through each of them, she's seeing something, a new shade of the complexity of dynamics, you know, including one of my favorite ones is the guy who says, I would love to shoot. I want to kill everybody who can't actually do it. It's like the contradiction of like what we behave like versus what's actually going on inside of our heart is like a wonderful thing for her to try to observe.
But it's also interesting too, because the idea of so many times in superhero movies is about the hero having taken this journey and then becoming his or her own person. But in fact, you are always, the movie is always about Wonder Woman being part of a social construct.
Yeah.
And that there is no movement alone, that the real heroism comes from finding like-minded people to travel with you.
Right. That's great. I love that. I would never think of putting it in those words, and I think that's incredibly true. And I think that also, you know, I think once you really dig into trying to tell any story as a character story, no person is an island. It's a fantasy that we would ever be unaffected or an island, whether you're the president of the United States or you're, you know, a homeless person. It's like we are all, interdependent upon each other. So that's just a point of view that I think makes sense to me, but also is very true to Diana because she's not ever going to be, it would never occur to be her to be isolated because that would be so unhuman, even though, of course, she's not human, but it would be, but she's so human, really. It would not be right for her.
But I guess I'm asking this because I wonder if there were other iterations or was there any sort of question about making her more the center of her own story rather than being part of a team?
Yeah, and the team I was more open to a conversation about. Like, I think the team ended up being both logistically important to the story, where you're like, you'd have a very hard time walking into a warlike setting just by yourself with no supplies. I mean, it would just be the questions alone. Secondarily, I loved the second that started to take shape. Oh my God, that's a wonderful thing to try to use each of those people to bring some different dimension than just Steve. But there was conversation about her relationship with Steve, about what does it mean? Does she need somebody else? That I had a very strong line about, and I still do to this day. I absolutely care about love stories. I absolutely care about people needing other people in this world, and that love and relationships with other people being a shade of the life experience. And to take that away from her would be to give her lesser than you should any universal character.
But I mean, it's also too getting to what we're talking about, this maturation process that happens throughout the film. You do that in groups.
Yeah.
You learn about yourself through groups anyway, don't you? I mean, so that's as we're talking about this, and now it seems like it's kind of obvious and natural, but in fact, so many of these things, these movies have not been about that. And in fact, so many of the comics have been about, is this character a loner or does this character belong in a group? And that's so much about the way you think. I just wonder if there was any kind of pushback at all. But obviously, you were ready for it if there had been.
Yeah, there wasn't really. I mean, luckily, I don't think that we got a ton of pushback about it. I feel like it's been more a conversation, like I said, about the danger of, like, what does it mean if she needs something from Steve, which I had extremely strong feelings about. I was saying, if she doesn't need anything from anyone, that's a terrible story.
But that was going to be an issue. I mean, because if she's an independent woman, then why does she need a man? The question comes up.
And I would always say, imagine this Superman. If Superman said, F off, Lois, I don't need you. I know everything. What kind of a journey is that? Like, that's not, you would never do that to a character you weren't afraid to give them the world. You know, I'm not afraid to give her the world. And the world is vulnerability and love as well, you know? And so, yeah, I felt very strongly about that story. But I was also supported completely by, you know, Warner Brothers and DC wanted him in the movie as well. But I think it was more kind of the speculation about the outside world. What is it saying? And I was saying, where's the victory? Where's the victory if Wonder Woman has less than other people out of fear?
Was it important here just because we can go back to, you know, what war meant in sort of in Greek lore and Greek mythology, that this character come of age in a war? Was that something that you thought had to be in the movie?
I don't think it had to be that way, but I think it was a wonderful way to do it and the quickest possible way to do it, really. And I think, in fact, I would have been very, very concerned if we were doing it in the time of a real war, even though people have done that. I think that the level of subtextual truth that I was wanting to have in there would have gotten really dodgy if we had done a war we were very familiar with.
Wow, because so much of Wonder Woman, and throughout the various inventions and takes on the character in the comics, placed that character in the war, near a war. And
yeah.
I just wondered if you thought, because of that proximity, that it was central for that character to go through that situation, to go through actual battle, and both in having battle come to her in a way that it doesn't, when the man Gaze enters those comics and changes everything.
I think it would have been central soon. So I think there's a version of the origin story one could have done where she comes to man's world and she tackles an unrelated villain first, and then in her next movie she tackles war. But then that would have extended that emotional journey, and I sort of liked this movie being giving birth entirely to the superhero and her point of view now on mankind.
Okay, because I was wondering too, that was one of the reasons to place it in World War I. I'm sure for a lot of kids seeing the movie think they actually call them a war, the war to end all wars. And
yeah.
I'm sure that strikes kids as being really fascinating. But putting her in World War I basically kind of sets her before, historically, all the other superheroes, doesn't
yep.
it?
First of all time, which I love. We don't make a big deal out of it, but
I delighted in it.
Yeah, I delighted in it. That this is like the OG original like superhero of all time now. Predates everyone. So, so cool.
Because I figured that also had to be the reason you have that photograph of her and that team, so people can – there's visual evidence in the future for those who may be waiting for a Justice League movie or something that she was there before everybody else was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool.
I think it's great. It's so much fun having you. Thank you so much for doing this, Patty. Really, thank you.
Awesome. It was great to see you, Elvis, and I always love talking to you.
I feel the same. That's why you're here. The director is Patty Jenkins. A film, of course, you may have heard of it, Wonder Woman. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Marcia Caldwell. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Vidor, associate producer. Nothing wonderful about me. It's the treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.